Time. In our godly play classrooms, we tell our children that there is a time for everything. There is a time to get up in the morning and a time to go to sleep. There is a time to go to school, a time to go to work, and a time to rest. There is a time for rain, a lot of time for rain. There's a time for sun. There's a time for darkness, and there is a time for light. And we say that often people think of time as a line. There is a beginning to this line. And as time goes on, the beginning gets old. And time stretches on and on until there is an ending. And just as the beginning is old, the ending becomes new. Now, a long time ago, the church tied the two ends of time together. And now, in every ending, there is a beginning. In every beginning, there is an ending. And it goes on and on and on forever. This time at All Souls Berkeley is quite remarkable, even historic. Yesterday, under the soaring arches of Grace Cathedral, the Reverend Joseph Delgado was received by our bishop, Mark Andrus, as a priest in this branch of Christ's one holy Catholic and apostolic church. On Tuesday, just 2 days in this very space, the Reverend Liz Titchener will be ordained a priest in this living body by the Bishop of New Hampshire, Gene Robinson. Now, these two services are occasions for great joy and celebration. And celebrate we have, and celebrate we will. But I believe we would be doing ourselves a disservice if we neglected some of what has led up to these signal moments of new beginning in Joseph and in Liz's lives. Because along the way to these profound moments of new life for Liz and for Joseph, there has been challenge, there has been turmoil, there has been heartache. At times, the way forward was not clear. And truth be told, there may be more of this to come. For all too often, when we talk about or imagine new life, birth in all of its forms, at least I, for one, jump ahead to the equivalent of beautiful new babies, chubby-cheeked, all swaddled up and cuddly. And then we hear passages like our gospel today, and we are reminded that beginnings often aren't all that easy. In fact, they rarely are. From my small data sample of being present for two births, none of them my births, but births I was present for, I actually recall a fair amount of pain, frustration, and uncertainty. Because birth is a messy business. Beautiful, but messy. And overwhelming. And frankly, friends, these feelings don't magically disappear when the baby is born or when the ordination has taken place or when the new school or the new job have begun. Often the after effects of these big changes in our lives continue to rock our worlds as we continue to come to terms with what is happening around us, what is happening to us, what is happening within us. So it is fitting that this is where the first Sunday of Advent places us, squarely in the midst of pain and frustration and confusion and uncertainty at the end of time. This is bizarre, maybe, but it's fitting. Now, if you came this morning expecting to hear about this birth to come, just wait a few more weeks. And if you came this morning waiting to hear maybe about John the Baptist pointing the way to this birth, a couple weeks more. Because this year, because every year, the new year of the church's calendar begins today, the first Sunday of Advent. Advent from the Latin adventus, which means coming or arrival. And every year for this arrival, we hear one or another version of this same story, Jesus talking about the apocalyptic endings. Signs in the sun, moon, and stars, distress among nations, the roaring of the sea and the waves. This is a strange start to a new year unless we remember that we are awaiting a birth and that with every birth comes challenge, sometimes conflict, often difficulty. This is true for communities just as it is for individuals. Has anybody else had the experience of attempting to blend family customs and patterns at the start of a new relationship? This is why MFCCs are in business. Families are families are families. And it was no different in our recent vision process here at All Souls. Over the past couple of months, the group that has been steering this vision process, the process that has led to the vision in our bulletins this morning, in the process of creating this vision, well, there have been some hard times. There were moments of great tension where the way forward was unclear. Times when it seemed as if members of the group held diametrically opposed views, had seemingly irreconcilable differences. Now, at first, this made me anxious. At first, I saw this as a fault, as if this were something broken that needed to be fixed. But as we held the space together, doing our best to stay in relationship no matter the issue at hand, I was reminded that when something new comes into being, there is struggle. There must be struggle. And that staying present in that tension is where we are called. So often our instincts are to fight it or to flee from it, which simply worsens it. And yet the temptations to do this are real and they are legion. And so this might be why the text from Luke's gospel, the account of the good news this morning, warns us about three traps as we wait for new life. Dissipation, drunkenness, and the worries of this life. Let's take them in order. First, dissipation. It's a lovely word, dissipation. The wasting of one's self, engaging in diversions to their own end, scattering oneself in endless indulgence. You know, I get where this comes from. Wanting to divert your attention from the pain or the indifference around you, whether through online alternate realities or through the plethora of reality TV or through shopping therapy or through plate upon plate of turkey with the trimmings. There are many, many ways to dissipate what is here now. And drunkenness seems pretty straightforward. This trap can be sprung anytime we reach for something to deaden us to the world around us. And sure, alcohol can do this, as can prescription drugs. Any substance that will momentarily take us away, removing us from the uncertainty and the suffering that surrounds us. This is more than one glass of wine or a finger of whiskey. It is one after another. It is just to take the edge off. It is day after day, gradually ensuring that we don't feel anything anymore. The third trap seems different than the others, the worries of this life. I mean, who isn't concerned about the world in which we live? But consumed by the worries of this life, that's another question altogether. No matter how many admonishments we hear from Jesus about worrying, for those who wish to control life around them, this is a challenging trap to escape. Listen. It's what caught Martha up when she and Mary had Jesus in their home. You remember this story? Here Jesus was over for dinner. And Martha was doing what every good host does, right? She was preparing the meal. She was getting the space ready for this important guest. And all the while, Mary was just sitting with Jesus, seemingly oblivious to all the necessary preparations around her. And in a moment of frustration, remember they were sisters, Martha says to Jesus, "Now this isn't right. Why isn't she doing some of this work?" "Martha," Jesus says, "you are distracted by many things. Mary is focused on the one thing." Now, friends, this wasn't about work. Meals need to be cooked. You see, it was about Martha's worrying herself to distraction. That was at issue. About matters which she could not control. Not that this is a problem for any of us, I'm sure. I mean, I only checked Nate Silver's blog calculating the likely winners of the national election once a day. Or 14. So what to do? It was the 20th century theologian Jürgen Moltmann who presents us with what I believe is a way forward. He talks about Christian hope this way. Not as an opium of the beyond, but rather as the divine power that makes us alive in this world. Again, not as an opium of the beyond, but as the divine power that makes us alive in this world. I find this to be critical, especially at this time of the year when the culture which surrounds us is on fast forward while we are attempting to pause. And as disconcerting as it may feel, we cannot distract or dull ourselves or allow our hope for what is to come to remove us from the world around us. Instead, we are being asked to open our hearts, becoming more alive to all that is in its beauty, in its pain, ultimately in its mystery. Be alert, Jesus tells us. Be on guard. Be aware of what is drawing near. And so here we are in this time of waiting, waiting for Jesus to be born. Born into this story, born in us. Expecting the first coming, anticipating a second coming, or more truly, a reappearing. Friends, this is not an easy space to live in, for in the silence, the darkness, it can be deafening. It is waiting, longing, longing for that call for the next interview. It is waiting for the test results that will probably bring yet another round of testing to find out what is going on. It is becoming aware that next month will bring retirement, a complete change of life and identity. It is getting ready for a stranger, for there is no stranger than a baby. As Wesley Avram has said, it is a kind of living in between, aware of Jesus, waiting for Jesus, and coming to know this Jesus for whom we wait in the midst of an eventful, unpredictable, even tumultuous world, waiting to stand before Him, yet not always knowing where He is. It is in between. My hope at this time of Advent, of arrival, is that we can wait together, even in the changes and the chances of this life, even as these nights grow long, when it seems as if the darkness will overwhelm the light. We wait together. Because the light will shine, the darkness will not, cannot overcome it. We wait for the Lord whose day is near. We wait for the Lord. Be strong, take heart.